Blessed are the storytellers, for they shall create reality. Well, it's true, isn't it? In today's day and age, the media are the storytellers, shaping the narrative. And now everyone has the internet in their pocket, all nicely designed and tweaked to grab and keep your attention like an addiction. What's trending? What are today's talking points? And how should we feel about them? How should we feel about those who don't agree? Narrative is everything. With the right words, you can be thrown onto the side of the aggressor or the victim and pay for the privilege. My father once said that newspapers are there to sell newspapers, not to report the news. And what sells? Fear. Editors of these newspapers and other media are there to create fear and powerlessness. It's a direct choice they make. Don't travel, that country's dangerous. Don't go outside, you may get sunburnt or cancer or lynched. Don't feel happy, because that always precedes something awful happening. How many times have you ingested the news, only to realize that you've swallowed a huge amount of negativity and there's nothing you can do about any of it? Fear and powerlessness. It's a choice. Storytellers are the most powerful people in this reality. Well, this is my story. I write this as a memoir, a confession of sorts. I look for no absolution from whatever has sent me on this journey. But I guess I want this to serve as a warning for anyone who may get their hands on this message that human society is a construct, a distraction. You don't have to play the game of jobs and mortgages or anything like that, because buying into society is a waste of time and energy. After all, what would you do if you knew the world was about to end? Have you noticed over the last couple of years how the craziness has just accelerated? How it's just gone from dial-up to fiber, from calling a landline to see if someone's home, to being able to track them via their phone, their neural link, or their fridge? How the leaders of the Western world have devolved to caricatures heralding the end of a civilized society, with a compliant media telling you that everything's just great and you've never had it so good. The biggest peddlers of propaganda, misinformation and disinformation are governments themselves. The emperors truly have no clothes. Then it seems also that suddenly the threats have increased. From antibiotic resistance to technology being able to edit your video and voice, genetic engineering breakthroughs and the advent of AI smart enough to fool us, a supervolcano waiting for an excuse to blow, more lumps of rock grazing past the earth, nuclear power stations being hacked into remotely, machines that can program, build and upgrade themselves autonomously, doom-scrolling, climate change, food scarcity, data theft, social credit, the list is endless and all converging. A plague on both your houses. To me, it doesn't seem that strange anymore. It's an end game, a bowing out of a society ready for a reset switch, a grand finale. Exit sanity pursued by a Brexit. Conspiracy theorists don't seem so crazy these days. And then it devolves still further. Illness and death, authoritarianism, totalitarianism. The riots start in America, cross the pond, and Europe destabilizes. As a last gasp, someone pushes the button and the bombs start flying, rendering the world uninhabitable and its human population dead or dying to be succeeded. Well, to be superseded. After all, even 30 years after Chernobyl, animal life was flourishing in the zone around the power station, making the most of having no more humans around. Maybe it's for the best. I was born James Theodore Parkin just outside Edinburgh on the 12th of February 1984. I attended the prestigious Edinburgh Academy, with its Doric frontage, quaint customs and endemic bullying, and joining the ranks of Ackies or Academicals, the old boys, alongside such luminaries as R.M. Ballantyne, Magnus Magnusson and Robert Louis Stevenson. From there to St. John's College, Oxford, reading law, A job in politics was available, had I wanted it then, but I felt called to the bar and became a lawyer. By the time it all ended, I'd had a good career. I was eloquent, tenacious, and fought for the rights of people like me against those who would take them away. I watched the disturbances unfold with a sense of shock. I'd had no idea that such things were possible in this day and age. And when the news came that nuclear war had started, even after the pandemic and everything else, I was horrified. The Labour government in England brought in on a wave of hope after 14 years of Tory rule, only to continue with more of the same, pulled up all the ladders once the food riots began, leaving me and my family to be robbed, beaten, and strung up as facilitators of hatred. I looked into my wife's eyes as the life drained from mine. Strange how, when we do what society says is good, to have a good job, a loving wife, children, a mortgage, all of it meant nothing in the end. I couldn't think of a single achievement from a life lived like that. I hadn't done anything that I could point to and say, I'm really pleased I did that. It was all quite meaningless in the end. I didn't stand up for anything, didn't poke my head above the parapet, swim against the tide, nothing. I just did as I was told. I followed the rules and I kept going until everything that we called society crumbled. And that's something important, really. Society is something we all agree on. It's a fiction designed to make sure everything keeps moving, stays somewhat together. Reality is just what we all judge to be there, what we pass on to our children. Is it actually what's real? No. Especially when what I thought to be life restarted. I was born James Theodore Parkin just outside Edinburgh on the 12th of February 1984. In my childhood, I had glimpses of a former life, a life where I'd done the right thing through the bullying, the weight of parental expectation and society's norms. At the age of 6, I woke my parents up, having had a nightmare about being lynched whilst rioters brayed around me in an apocalyptic wasteland. The nightmare persisted past the point of being taken to a therapist and ended with me spending time in an institution hidden away from polite society. They called it boarding school. I called it St. Philip's, a home for disturbed youngsters. I was there for 5 years. At the age of 11, I returned to Scotland to take a place at the Edinburgh Academy, my family convinced that all was well. My time away had not given me a great grounding in Latin, mathematics, and debating, but I was able to read and write to a level where the school could be paid enough to let me in. When I stood up to the bullies who were calling me a deranged freak by breaking their jaws, I was then sent to a different school for boarders, in Singapore. The time away from the stuffy confines of familial life worked wonders, and I got to see life from an Eastern perspective, rather than solely fed by media billionaires. The internet over there was light years ahead of what we had at home, and once I turned 18, I travelled across East Asia. By that point, I'd learnt enough that I could see the dreams for what they were, a tangent from my life, another version of me, another story with different parameters. Strange how things can change from a small change of circumstances. I don't think I quite grasped the magnitude of the issue, but I at least was centred enough to know that it wasn't to be feared. I spent time in India, relaxing in the lake city of Udaipur, feeling the tension of the Pakistan border in Jaisalmer and being harangued by the tourist traders in Delhi. I crossed into Nepal, climbed Everest, ventured to Tibet before the borders became more hostile to foreigners. As tensions began to rise again in the West, I watched as China became more paranoid towards Taiwan, and I saw the South China Sea become a flashpoint for violence. As North Korea bunkered down for a missile-slinging contest with Japan and America, I realized that I had seen some of this before. My dreams had prophesied this and the coming nuclear holocaust. They were right. The bombs came again, and my vantage point from Taiwan was a flashpoint between the two superpowers of East and West. I died, in a cruel twist of irony, in the arms of a policeman in the 228 Memorial Park in Taipei, a park to commemorate a brutal governmental police crackdown on protesters in 1947. I was born James Theodore Parkin just outside Edinburgh on the 12th of February 1984. As a child, I had the nightmares, but also the knowledge that this was somehow normal. There were no nightly screaming fits, beyond what can be considered normal for children, no subsequent hiding of the mad son, no worries of being sent away. I attended the prestigious Edinburgh Academy, excelling in all my subjects due to two lifetimes of accrued knowledge that were seeping back to my conscious mind. My last life left me with a knowledge of Cantonese, Mandarin, and Taiwanese, and I built on these by studying them in my spare time as a teenager. I was put in an accelerated program at school. The nascent internet on top of the range 386s allowed a small amount of correspondence with the outside world. I had a Chinese pen pal who sent letters, do you remember those? And I used my time wisely to plot the way forward. I took my GCSEs 2 years early, passed without difficulty and completed 5 A-levels the following year. Accepted to Cambridge at the age of 15, I matriculated in the autumn of 2000 at Peterhouse College reading PPE, Philosophy, Politics and Economics, the standard degree for anyone who wants to get into government. I might have wondered, looking back, how I was seemingly so blasé about being on my third run through my life. Though, when you've played enough games, read enough fiction and watched Groundhog Day, it breeds a certain familiarity, not to say contempt. Plus, unlike Bill Murray in that film, I had years to get used to the idea, not just 24 hours. Can you imagine the frustration of a 96-year-old going through puberty for the third time? The idea of a 15-year-old at university may well seem utterly bizarre, but my peers could be convinced that I was old beyond my years. In some ways, this was not a bonus. Some people indulged in the reverse snobbery of a spotty teenager being able to converse in 6 languages with a knowledge of the world that far surpassed them, but after a short while I learnt when to keep my mouth shut. So, whilst at university, I spoke to the right people and got into the right circles. I explored my bisexuality and thus, in 2005, found myself a special advisor to one of the new crop of Conservative MPs representing a prominent southern constituency. With access to the inner workings of government, I felt that I may be able to change matters, and in 2010 became a member of the coalition government myself. The world was still reeling from the financial crash of 2008, and without a significant turnaround, I knew that the road to Brexit, civil war, and disease response was well on the way to being built. It is curious how different life looks from behind the lens of government. It is what you think it is, and also the complete opposite. It may look like a complete shambles, and in far too many ways it is. It's a viper's nest of nepotism, ego, and backhanders, but there are good people trying to do what's best for the country in there too. It may appear that they don't care, but they're certainly trying to. So many groups with so many different lobbyists and so tenuous a grasp on power. I felt sick even being in there, seeing laws being passed that were being broken by the lawmakers, and the sheer contempt that they had for the common man. Tighten your purses while paying for our expenses. Stay at home while we party. If you want to know what people are like, don't listen to what they say. Watch what they do. I worked my way up. I campaigned vociferously to remain in the European Union to try and change the outcome of the referendum, but no dice. I was reshuffled, demoted and cast out, serving my remaining time on the earth trying to find the right ears to shout into that the world was about to end. No one listened, and the more I tried to warn people, the more the governmental machine worked to call me a charlatan, a conspiracy theorist and a hack. And finally, with the help of the right-wing papers, I lost my seat in the 2017 election. The Brexit talks collapsed as they had done 2 lifetimes previously. Illness swept the world, and I was again lynched by rioters as the bombs fell again, hanged as a traitor to the common folk. The slogans etched into my body, the spitting of the phrase "all in it together," all left an indelible stain on my psyche. I had lived 3 lives, died 3 deaths, and hoped to whatever deity might be listening that I wouldn't have to do it again. You can imagine my frustration when the wheel turned a fourth time. I was born James Theodore Parkin just outside Edinburgh on the 12th of February 1984. This time the memories reformed much earlier and my consciousness resurfaced while still a baby. My frustration compounded when faced with a small body that didn't do what I wanted it to, and the demeaning feeling of having my nappy changed for me was almost unbearable. I had lived over a century by this point, and I was stuck inside a cage being gurgled at. I knew that cot death was a possibility, and worked out how to do it by turning over to sleep on my stomach and lifting my head enough to drop it into the bars of my cot. It worked, and death came swiftly. I didn't wake up so much as rediscover consciousness, only to find myself in blackness. At first, the cool emptiness was a balm to my soul, but as I rested, alone and trapped, I think I may have gone slightly mad. My internal sensors of time marked minutes, hours, then days, all the while in a haze of senselessness. Months became years, and I slowly but surely came around to the idea of using my state as a form of sleep to reorder my first three lifetimes' worth of experience and plan my next one, if indeed there was another one. More years passed, and I cursed every single one of them. I could put up with the indignity of nappies being changed if it would mean that I stayed alive. I evidently wasn't meant to leave life any sooner than my allotted time. I laughed, I cried, I railed, cursed, and broke down in ecstasy. I plotted soberly, meditated, and waited. 41 years I waited. 41 years. Until my time should have been up, and then, with the glacial movement of time, the tunnel of light appeared, and I found myself back in the world again. I was born James Theodore Parkin just outside Edinburgh on the 12th of February 1984. I drank in the colours, the smells, the bright lights, and I laughed internally for the sheer joy of the senses. As the umbilical was cut, I felt a freedom that I had not felt before. This time round, the cot couldn't hold me. I didn't want to be trapped again, but I didn't want to go back to that dark place either. I wanted to feel, to see and experience, to be mobile and be free. I wanted adventure. I put my parents through a lot of trouble those first few years, until the time came for the 1988 Winter Olympics in Calgary. I managed to nag enough times, drop enough hints by subtly rearranging fridge magnet letters and using various techniques gleaned from my lifetimes to suggest that we head to Canada for the games. If you don't believe I could do it, then let's just say you don't survive in government without a working knowledge of making people think your ideas are theirs. I had my fourth birthday party in Canada, then took a trip across the border to Seattle to visit family. Travelling within North America was much easier in the 80s, and I was waved through on my mother's passport. Thankfully, guns are so much more accessible in the States, and you only need to look at the headlines to know that toddlers can get their hands on firearms far too easily. My parents became statistics, and I was finally free. I faked an accent, used my knowledge to be in the right places at the right times, and inveigled myself into an emerging software company by befriending the children of a Microsoft employee. Encarta launched in 1993, and I was one of the children's beta testers. I had behind-the-scenes access to so much raw code. No one suspects a child, especially in the 90s. Bill Clinton was providing enough distractions by not having sexual relations with that woman, and all the while I was trying my best to leave messages to anyone who would listen deep in all the source code I could find. I hoped that the tech geeks out there might smell a conspiracy and help me to turn things around. Again, I knew enough about the workings of government to know that both sides of the conspiracy are played for fools. The millennium dawned again, and my adoptive father, as he was now, was investing in the correct stocks and shares for the dot-com bubble. I used my knowledge of world events in 2001 to ensure he was in the right place at the right time to be at the center of the biggest terrorist incident in the continental United States. I inherited the lot due to a certain last-minute change in his will, and I was set. I moved to California, got a job at Apple within the design team, again trying to leave a trail of crumbs to warn anyone of the impending disaster. Of course, I didn't just work there. I was independently wealthy. I wrote articles under a pseudonym, stories, and so forth. I traveled the world learning about the places that I remembered as being flashpoints. I studied human events so that I could remember them in case I had to live through them all again. I also loved. In all my lives, I had girlfriends, boyfriends, liaisons. But how does one distill a lifetime into a few paragraphs? As the time came round for the bombs to drop, I used my wealth to build a shelter in New Zealand and simply to hide away. I'd done enough for humanity, hadn't I? I had tried. Was I too nervous, maybe? Had too much riding on that day and hour? Or was it whatever the hell this groundhog life is wanting to fuck with me? In any case, as the bombs hit and the world groaned, I suffered a fatal heart attack, feeling the crushing of my chest and my hopes. Maybe I wasn't meant to try to save humanity. It wouldn't surprise me if that were the case. But that time I felt like I'd almost made it, so I decided that if I were to be reset, I would find my way to America in much the same way, then get into government instead. If I couldn't stop the horror from without, maybe I would be able to from within. I was born James Theodore Parkin just outside Edinburgh on the 12th of February 1984, again and again, each time trying something new. Actor, writer, poet, minister, imam, socialite, farmer, activist, businessman. Lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes of knowing that the end was coming and trying to avoid it. But how do you avoid a date in the calendar? Even when I was an astronaut on board the International Space Station, I saw the world burn and felt myself slip away. I visited the dark place of senselessness too many times, sometimes by accident, sometimes by my own hand. Again and again and again, I was born James Theodore Parkin, and each time the bombs eventually came and the process restarted. Until that penultimate time. I was born James Theodore Parkin just outside Edinburgh on the 12th of February 1984. I now had several centuries of knowledge in my mind and a plan. I went to university at 10, graduated top of my year, and went into medical research. I knew when antibiotic resistance would become a severe factor, and I knew where the ancient and modern diseases were kept. I bred strains of smallpox, MRSA and TB, and travelled to major population centres and left vials of them hidden with radio-controlled detonators. I inoculated myself against them and I waited. I was going to wait for the cover of the pandemic of 2020, retire to my New Zealand hideout and wait out the genocide, but life had other plans. A stray radio signal detonated my capsules in 2014 before I and the bacterial resistance were ready. It took me and the world by complete surprise, not least because the medical services of the world were somehow able to combat the threats, but mainly because the partial genocide of the human population gave me such a rush of peace that I had not yet known. In destroying a good 40% of the human population, I was blissfully euphoric. I tasted joy. Could it be that after centuries I could find peace? And yet, the world is such a beautiful place. There are animals and grasslands and oceans and caves and stars and galaxies and vistas that are beyond imagining. And yet, the powers that be grind you to being a wage slave watched over by smart devices and kept in fear of losing your job and not having enough money. I was born James Theodore Parkin just outside Edinburgh on the 12th of February 1984. I have watched humanity grow and stagnate in its distractions, its phones, fakery and celebrity culture. I have journeyed across the world and within myself. This literary journey has been a wonderfully cathartic recapitulation in itself and has prepared me for what comes next. Humanity has run its course, and I am positioned perfectly to make sure I reap the peace I deserve. So use your last few months wisely, humanity. Society has nothing to offer you save the slavery of consumerism, the attention-sapping of mindless games, and the energetic wasteland of playing one side against the other. We have all been deceived, and the time has now come to play the final chords of the soap opera of our lives. So go out there and do something amazing and meaningful, because next year is the final curtain. Stop waiting for someone to give you permission to travel, or start that novel, or run that marathon. You haven't time enough to waste it on mithering. Ignore the partisan rubbish, switch off the TV, and fulfill your dreams while you still can. I was born James Theodore Parkin just outside Edinburgh on the 12th of February 1984. And next year, I shall bring about the destruction of humanity. And then my heart will sing.
I was born James Theodore Parkin, was written and performed by David Ault. Music by Sharon B. and Incomputech. Editing and credits by Jack J. Ward. For the Transcontinental Terror Showcase and the Darker Musings Anthology. Good night.